This is going to be torture for anyone that can't stand me doing accents.
That's clearly the highlight, though. People love it.
Because it's going to be a lot of Australian.
It's just mainly Australian. No northern accents.
Full from Leeds to audition for Pop Stars Australia. Okay. You are listening to Right Back Atcha, the Naughties Pop Music Podcast with myself, Joel Babington, and the sixth member of Scandalous, David Lim. How are you doing, David? Or should I say, how are you going?
I'm doing great, Joel. And it's actually really, really great to have you. It's not been the same since you moved out.
Never be the same again.
Never be the same again, as Melanie Chisholm would say.
That's
yes.
What she wrote it about.
Yeah.
She saw into the future.
She did. She had a That's So Raven moment and just... That was how she came up with the song. No, but today we are talking about a whole different kettle of pop stars, like a whole different breed.
Mm.
It's a whole new era.
New continent.
New continent, you're right. But we're always, I think, in our hearts, we're very fascinated with what Australia was doing in the noughties.
The Australia pop scene is fascinating, full stop. It's so interesting. You know how I love the Aussie pop girls.
Mm.
You obviously love the Aussie pop girls. And I love it when you introduce me to pop that I didn't know of, because it's unearthing a whole new part of the noughties to me. It's like getting it all over again. It's getting literally whole new chapters of pop for me. It's mind-blowing.
But at the same time, there's so much connection between... the world's over here and what was going on in Australia. So I'm just bridging the gap, you know?
Mm.
Improving relations between Britain and Australia. Breaking down barriers.
One pop act at a time.
One pop star series at a time, yes.
So, you have wanted to do this episode since we started the podcast.
Mm.
And I was always sort of... It was always in the long list and I was sort of like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I needed some nudging and persuading... And I am so happy we did, because today we are doing Pop Stars Australia, Seasons 1 and 2, or as I like to call it, Pop Stars Down Under.
I want to be a pop star.
There is a angel on earth out there that has put Seasons 1 and 2 of Pop Stars Australia on YouTube.
In full.
In full. VHS rips, little bits are missing, but it sort of adds to it.
Yeah.
I started watching this Pop Stars Australia and I literally became obsessed. I watched it all last year. And David, it might be in a TV show from 2000-2001, but it was my favourite TV show of 2019.
So we last year did an episode on the UK pop stars. Mm. It was a Hearsay and Liberty X episode. And we touched on the fact that by the time Hearsay came around, we already had one season of Australian pop stars. Mm. So you can sort of see it as a predecessor to it. So it was absolutely fascinating doing that episode and now going one step back in time again to do series one of our Australian pop stars. And of course, the one that came after, which sort of sandwiches the Hearsay Liberty X formation years. So I feel like we're completing the puzzle of this universe between UK and Australian pop stars now. Mm. Safe to say, without Bardo, the girls that won the first season, would there be a Hearsay? Question mark.
Well, it actually started in...
New Zealand.
New Zealand first, David.
The land that we love. And I'm not trying to take anything away from New Zealand,
Don't try
Joel.
And take all the credit,
no,
David.
No, no.
We were the first ones in Australia. We did it. Down Under, bigger, better than ever, started everything. No one else did it ever.
Oh.
Luckily, it wasn't a spillage. So, yes, New Zealand did do it first.
They had 1 year of it, and the winning group, True Bliss, five-piece girl group, designed to sort of emulate the Spice Girls, like everyone did after the Spice Girls. Mm. You know, your kind of girl thing and everyone like that. Everyone was getting in on the action. After 1999 with True Bliss in New Zealand, the year 2000 rolled around and Australia was jumping on it.
So Pop Stars Australia, correct me if I'm wrong, David, a really big deal.
Massive deal. The TV show was a huge hit, averaging 2.6 million viewers every episode, which is massive in Australia. The goal was to create a five-piece Australian girl group. This group will be signed to Warner Music. They will be a big international act. It's all very exciting, but going to be put together very, very quickly and right before your eyes.
Wasn't it set up so that the girls found out about the audition through a magazine? I think that's how you applied.
Yeah, so it was a partnership between Austereo, which is a huge radio network over there in Australia, and also New Idea magazine. So you're right, you had to pick up a copy of New Idea to enter. Yeah, because the form was in there.
It wasn't just a big open audition. I mean, it was huge auditions still, but
you got to get your copy of New Idea.
You can't just say, I'm Sally and I heard about it, so let me in, you know? So before we get into Bardot, shall we talk about Popstar Series 1?
Yes. This is like early days of reality TV. Like, it's... the setup was just so raw. I know we said this about our UK Popstars first series, but...
even more so. Even more so.
You know, this was before a time where people knew how to perform for the cameras or became hyper aware of how they would be perceived on reality TV format. So people were less savvy in the way they approached and opened themselves in front of the lens, I would say.
Yes, definitely. I fell in love with your Australian icon, Jackie O. This woman is an absolute queen.
A long-time radio fixture. But this was her first time crossing over to TV.
So and she didn't really get paid for this. I don't think she even knew to negotiate that in her contract.
Because Austereo was sponsoring the show, I think they sort of went, oh, you know, we're going to put Jackie in front of it and she can be one of the judges. So she probably thought, oh, yeah, it's part of the deal, whatever. You know, I don't get paid extra for this, but it's great exposure. Mm. And what a revelation she was.
If you've seen the UK version, she's kind of the Australian Nikki Chapman role. But instead of how Nikki is that glamorous auntie next door type that you adore, Jackie O's more sort of like the bombshell next door that you adore. Like, she could definitely be on Home and Away.
Mm.
And Nick Bond on Twitter pointed out that Jackie always keeps her handbag with her at all times. And it is so iconic. Once you notice it, you can't unsee it. She has it in all the scenes. And it's just fab. It's just fab. Keep it on you. I mean, Hun wasn't getting paid, so she's got to keep her things close. So all she was getting was her per diems, you know, to cover lunch and expenses. And she said the first day she got handed her per diem and she went over to one of the senior producers and gave them a big hug saying, thank you so much.
Aww.
Because she thought that was her pay.
Oh.
So the introduction to Jackie O is definitely one of the highlights for me, and especially in series one.
What's also really iconic about this first Popstars is Marsha Hines makes a cameo appearance. Marsha is quite iconic for the fact that she is an OG Australian Idol judge.
Wow.
Now, this is years before Australian Idol started, so it was interesting to see Marsha planting the seed of wanting to be part of a TV format like this, because she would just randomly turn up to, like, rehearsals and all that and go, this is great. Australia should do more of this. Flash forward, that's a Raven style. And she's, like, the matriarch of the Australian Idol franchise.
She pops up at their first full-length concert as well.
Oh yeah, she did the red carpet, she did the step and repeat, had her pictures taken, said a few words to the press. Yes.
Wish the girls all the best tonight.
Yes.
I think because it was the first time this sort of thing had been done, they felt like they needed to be very informative. So when it's whittling down, they're showing you all the girls to let you know who's got into the final 20, who's into the final 10. And some of these girls, it feels like you've never really seen before, but it's showing you them anyway. And you see clips and it's showing you their name, and then it just has a tick or a cross whether they get through to the next round.
Yeah, like a bingo card.
And some you're like, oh, they'll definitely get through. No. And some you're like, they are never going to get through. Tick. And you're like, what? It is hilarious. People were after a different thing talent-wise at the time, but some of them you're just like, what are you thinking? When it got to the final 10 and they're going to tell them all they didn't make it and or they did make it.
Look, it's been really hard. We've seen
lots
of different girls.
Yeah.
We've been making calls and we've been going to homes and you've done really well. Like you've really come very far, but unfortunately, you've not made the group.
Oh, no, no. Do you know what? It's all right. Yeah, yeah. No, I didn't think I'd get it. You know, it's been such a good experience and, you know, to come this far and, you know, at the boot camp, it was amazing. But no, yeah, no, no, I didn't think I'd get it. No, best of luck to the girls. No, thank you. Do you not feel like everyone had that reaction?
Yeah, but I think it's a very Aussie way of dealing with it.
There's that one girl and she goes, only come in if it's good news. And she doesn't make it. Oh, God, I was so like, yeah. Oh, it's like you're looking like that, like watching it behind a pillow, like watching a horror movie. Only come in if it's good news. Well,
we're going to come in anyway. I think it was what the guy said. We need to do this inside.
As you know, there are like 10 girls to choose from and all are extremely talented and it's the hardest thing to pick five to make the group and choosing the right ones. And,
no? Say it, just say it.
You're in the group.
My God, why'd you do that?
That was so
So they
bad.
Pick their final five girls and it's Sophie, Sally, Katie, Belinda and Chantel. Now, Chantel was one of the original members.
In the editing of the show, she was quite prominent in it. Like, she was kind of the sensual brunette girl next door from Perth. Gorgeous face, gorgeous lips. And you got Katie, as she said, from Melbourne. Real standout visually and vocally as
Very edgy girl.
Yeah, she's the only one you see really with like a short, bright red hair. You know, very kind of androgynous, kind of cyber pop star look. And she sold you that look from the very first audition, didn't she? Like she came in some sort of custom top that she bought from London and she was really proud of it because it looked like an edgy pop star costume.
But then they asked her to come back. They weren't initially completely sold on her vocally, but they said every time she's coming back, she sounds better and better and better.
And then we have Sophie Monk, the blonde Brisbane baby of the group.
Bombshell.
When we did our S Club Juniors episode, we referenced Sophie Monk. And my little brother, who's 11 years younger than me, he was listening to her and he was like, wait, you talked about Sophie Monk. I didn't know she sang.
You better stop, better run away. Sean, you gotta listen to what we say.
So there's a whole generation of Australians that don't remember a time where Sophie Monk was a singer, a pop star.
Like the Australian Billie Piper.
And then the other member we have is a gorgeous Sally Polyronis from Adelaide, a real firecracker kind of character. Now, I saw her as sort of a quasi leader of the group, if you will.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that because I saw Katie as more of the spokesperson of the group. She's the edgy one, but she's also very official, which don't necessarily go hand in hand, but works really well with her. It's really heartwarming.
And you got Belinda from Sydney, the glamorous model.
I'm in love with all of them. This TV show's made me fall in love with all of them. I was already really aware of Sophie going in because we'd spoken about her before. And I knew her actually from the bits of acting, really, that I'd seen her in. But through this show and Discovery, I really did fall in love with both Sally and Belinda. With Hearsay and Liberty X and all the with Clear, Girls Aloud, the weird obsession I have with those things is really sweet because it comes from childhood. And that excitement and that really fascination. Whereas I feel like I have that again in a sense, but as an adult. It's kind of that innocence of childhood excitement because it is a TV show of that time.
Yeah.
So it's like my inner child has got to relive all this again.
Yeah.
Not that he's ever died because we still talk about it all every day. But
yes. Anyway, let's talk about the bombshell that is Chantel. She leaves.
She leaves. And they're very in the midst of recording. The edit of the TV show was just that she had left because she was homesick and she decided to leave the group.
But in the lead up to that episode, they started planting seeds that, you know, they show edits of the girl saying, oh yeah, Chantel's really quiet.
In the edit, she starts to seem a little bit immature or a little bit less serious. I think there's bits of her like falling asleep in the studio and she's just starting to seem distant. And I think that was probably a choice in the edit. In real time, they knew what was happening. And then it comes out however many years later that she actually left because she had stole old poor Sophie Monk's per diems.
Scandalous.
I mean, no, that's next year, darling.
Oh, sorry. So they paid Chantel $1,000 to keep quiet about...
Hush money.
To keep quiet about the real reason why she was asked to leave the group.
Mm.
She took the $1,000 and then years later did an interview to explain why.
Apparently she wanted to buy a pair of boots. They're in a fresh new pop band. They're all living in a house. No one's getting paid yet because no one's made any money. So they're living off very small amount of per diems. I think $100 Australian a week. I might be wrong. Sophie said that Chantel said, oh, I'll look after the per diems.
No, big mistake. Never trust a bitch with your money.
Chantel went out and bought a pair of boots and said she was going to pay Sophie back, which then ultimately it was seen as stealing and she was asked to leave and she was given this hush money. Sophie has said she's the one that actually was trying to say, no, let's let her stay, even though she was the one that the crime had been committed to, which seems very nice. Sophie always does seem like quite a team player. I don't know if that's her PR spin. I choose to believe it because I want to. And then Chantel's gone to say that she felt like she had to leave Australia because of it.
Oh my God. The most hated woman in the country.
So she moved to LA, pops up in 90210. That's the go-to reference when you see her name now. Well, she did 90210. Imagine that. You're very young. You've had this great opportunity. We all make mistakes and do silly things when we're younger.
Mm.
You'd never want that to plague the rest of your career.
Yeah. And her and Sophie were the youngest members of this group. Everyone else was sort of, what, 22, 23. Mm. But out went Chantel.
Mm.
And in came one of the girls that didn't make the cut initially, Tiffany Wood from Newcastle.
Now, Tiffany wore wigs to every audition.
Wigs?
Yeah, they talk about it on the show. She had different hair in all her auditions. So she had long red wig.
Yes, yes.
That was her thing, was that she had sort of different wigs.
I thought when she came into the group, it looked more cohesive.
The real final piece of the puzzle, this yeah. work. So I really did feel for Tiffany at points. She's thrown in on the deep end. She's having to re-record through the night all the vocals.
She did a Jade Ewen Circus Suite 7.
Yeah. They have these direct-to-camera confessionals on, like, their own video cameras or whatnot.
Bardo Cam,
TIFF Cam. You're overworked, you're working all hours and you're tired. You would just be raw and real to this camera. But she's so vulnerable in what she's saying in those moments that's the side we don't really get to see much on these overproduced reality shows now.
Mm.
We're looking at it through these eyes of it's fun, it's sugary sweet, it's pop. But it was refreshing to see that. So the girls are fully together now. We don't know their name yet.
No.
Well, in the episode, they're kind of teasing. We're going to find out the episode and they keep doing the edit.
But I could hear like Sophie in the background of that scene where like the camera's on Tiffany and she's just saying no to everything. Bardot, like Bridget Bardot. And then Tiffany was like, oh, that's some old person's name.
And they go, she's an icon.
She's a legend. And then Tiffany goes...
Well, we're not icons, honey. Or we're not legends, honey. Something like that. But four against one. And Bardot. They get Bardot.
Yeah, which I thought was quite cool. At the time in Australia as a kid, I didn't know who Bridget Bardot was. But it made me fucking Google it quick. In the early days of Google and AOL.com.
Like that. One letter on a keyboard at a time.
Yeah, Yahoo search.
Waiting 5 minutes for a result. So during this time, you're really seeing them recording their album now. And we're getting to recording of their debut single.
Very exciting. The video
of their debut single.
We get to see that as part of the series. Very exciting,
We get to do the press tour, the school tour, the showing up at all the different radio stations.
Mm.
The amount of times we see them doing that a cappella of Poison. By the end of it, I'm joining in. Don't you treat me bad. Don't you make me sad. Our love could be deep as the ocean. If you can't be true, I got news for you. Just remember I can be poison.
So in April 2000, we have Australia's very first pop stars debut single, Poison. Now, this is not what I would have expected from a franchise like Popstars. Sensual, sophisticated R&B pop mid-tempo that really, truly, you listen to it today, has stood the test of time.
the cousin of the boy is mine, or, you know.
Or like the first Spice album, can you imagine?
I think it's a bit too hard-hitting.
Both trying to conjure up an image of the Spice Girls doing Poison as a B-side. Who would sing which part? Would Vicky B get the lead?
You better stop, better run away. You've gotta listen to what I say. This would have been a great Vicky solo track. So, the whole series builds up to Poison. We see the video of Poison and the making of. Stereotypical in the best possible way, Naughty's music video. Each girl has their own room, which is meant to represent them. And then there's a group shot as well.
Chris Moss from Warners is managing to control the mounting unease about the music clip.
Sheets flowing all down. That's what I do.
Where do you want to be?
I have crystals everywhere.
And I get a friggin' chocolate box.
Hello? What have I got? I've got bloody park benches.
It doesn't have to be an obvious reflection of you. It's not a mirror. It's taking all elements.
Other than, yeah.
So do you remember this being released in Australia?
It was a big fucking deal. I remember seeing this music video everywhere in Australia, and I was, okay, I'm not really sure if I like this song, but I love the video.
Oh.
Yeah, so I grew to like Poison.
And we must say, Poison has the iconic B-side, Empty Room. Now, Empty Room is introduced on Pop Stars.
Incessantly.
Incessantly. And that is they're all put into mock groups and they have to perform Empty Room and they're decided who's going to be in the band from that. It sounds very demo-y on Pop Stars, but
it is catchy as hell.
It is catchy as hell.
We've been singing it to each other for weeks.
By the time it gets to the B-side of the single,
you were ready for it.
And as you pointed out, it's a very sort of chill Ibiza mix of the song. Now it's an empty room without you, without you. It's an empty room to come home to. It's an empty room. So Poison by Bardo debuted at number one on the Australian singles chart, selling 60,000 copies in the first week.
It stayed at number one for 2 weeks. It became the sixth best-selling single in Australia in the year 2000. It was nominated for the highest-selling single award at the ARIA Awards and also Best Video, but both times they lost to Madison Avenue.
Don't Call Me Baby.
Yeah, and Who the Hell Are You, separately.
Right.
Poison also made number one in our land of lands, New Zealand.
Shout out to New Zealand.
Shout out to New Zealand. They weren't bitter that True Bliss didn't break it over in Australia. They embraced our girls. Poison was number one there for 3 consecutive weeks. And in April 2001, the girls came over to the UK and released Poison. And it peaked at number 45. But a little bit more on that later.
Before we get into the album, Bardo, I just want to talk about the wrap-up of Pop Stars, the series. So we've now seen on Pop Stars that it is a huge number one and they have their first full-length concert. And it's really great. There's lots of Vox Pops cutaways of people in the audience and you got such a different array of characters in the audience seeing it. You know, they're being asked, do you think Bardo will make it beyond the series Pop Stars? When they're just musicians releasing their own music. And the audience are like, yeah, of course they will. It's just really sweet. Everyone's excited. They're being asked, who's your favourite member? You had Tiffany with her signature big cowboy hats. And in rehearsals, her hair wasn't down. So it was so looked so big, this
and
cowboy hat.
And we saw
hat.
Lots of girls in the audience with cowboy hats.
Yes.
So Tiffany was on it with branding herself.
As part of the series, we see them all having this big makeover. And so Tiffany had gone from wearing wigs to then having her hair and then getting long extensions. They tried to get Katie to shave her head.
I couldn't believe that girl told her that. Hairstylist.
Yeah. What about a number two all over? Oh, I'm thinking about it.
I was like, don't even think about it.
And then they did this huge mall performance. And did you see at the signing, a woman went up to her and the signing went, glad you didn't shave your hair. I don't know if any of the other girls got sort of signature differences in their makeovers at all, but they all just got glammed up and looked bloody gorgeous. Towards the end of the series, and then mainly in the concert, we are introduced to the choreographer who's different to their video choreographer we've also seen. This guy, Jason Coleman, a big Australian choreographer.
Big personality, even bigger hair.
As someone that, you know, went to dance college and everything, it was such a treat to see him on screen because he was exactly like what so many of my teachers and choreographers that came in were like, and when you go to auditions, what they're like. So he sat in his chair watching, and then he runs up to get behind Sally when she's back and centre on this podium, to then go, ba, 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 hit all the moves. Ta, 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 ta. So he's a real big personality and a real joy. So the day after their first ever full-length concert, Bardo, the album, was released.
Iconic.
The cover of this album is incredible.
And it's all meant to send up on this notion that they're a manufactured pop group. So they've made each of these girls look like their own Mattel dolls.
Now, David, I think I would go on record to say that I think I enjoy this album more than you, maybe.
I think you might do,
because
yeah.
When we were talking about it, you kind of undersold me the album. You were like, ugh. So I think I was pleasantly surprised when I listened to it. Now, it is a mixed bag, don't get me wrong, but there are some really, I think as well, where I probably watched the show and listened to the album, I had that experience where you've just listened to the album.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Which is, you know, you've listened to it as a rightful music listener, where I've listened to it more.
Through a fan of the TV show.
Yeah, and had it shoehorned to me.
Yeah. So tell me, what are your highlights on this album?
Highlights for me is Higher Than Heaven is a fantastic track, but we have to say it is a cover of Kelly from Eternal's debut solo single.
Very light in that kind of Woolworths version of Mariah's Dream Lovers.
Mm.
I really wanted this to be a single.
And obviously we are excluding the singles in our standout tracks. There's also Holding On, the OG, Can You Turn It Up, Spoken Word. It's very Motown light turned noughties pop.
Oh.
Got Me Where You Want Me.
Oh, I was just like, is Joel going to say this?
It's kind of demo-y, but it works really well for me.
Yeah, it's like a very Disney Channel salsa vibes kind of song. And it's so much fun because they close the concert with it.
Yeah, it's the encore. Do you want one more? I was watching that this morning. I was dancing around the room to it at the concert.
What's amazing is this song is written by Lindy Robbins, who goes on to work with Demi Lovato and lots of really, really big names. Mm. So shout out to Lindy. Remember your roots. It's in Bardo. Wow.
Cara DeGuardi has a song on this album. Elliot Kennedy.
One of my highlights on the album is What You've Done.
What Have You Done?
By Elliot Kennedy, who's worked with the Spice Girls and Did Say You Be There, etc. It's an okay album, in my opinion. It's a bit of a mixed bag. It feels like a lot of it were undercooked songs, maybe very demo sounding, but
yeah,
it showed potential.
Rushed though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was rushed, but still, I was just like, come on, like, we can get this stuff right with the right people.
Yeah, the whole album has a lot of songs you can sing along to.
And we must say, Empty Room isn't on it.
Empty Room isn't on it, exclusively a B-side. I think that's their mistake, personally.
Was it in a UK edition?
It was on the UK edition. Because we've got taste. Just so you know, Katie wasn't on the cover of the UK edition. She wasn't on it at all, even though her vocals are on 12 out of 13 of the tracks. Let's talk about chart positions. This album was a number one in Australia and a number one in New Zealand.
Iconic. Number two in Singapore. It was the 12th best-selling album in Singapore in the year 2000.
Two times platinum in Australia and platinum in New Zealand. In the year-end charts, it was at 20 on the Australia ARIA charts and at number 8 on the Australian Artist ARIA charts.
This is the first Australian act to debut at number 1 with their first single and album. So shout out to Bardo. They really fucking did that. At the 2000 ARIA Awards, it was nominated for Highest Selling Album. But sadly, they lost the award to Savage Garden.
Savage. But deserved to them as well.
Yeah, true. So, looking at this first era of Bardo, they reckon Bardo generated $30 million in the first 6 months from merch, from records, and concerts.
Wow. I would have loved to have known them back then in the release. You know, it's a real shame that they're... It felt like it was a half-done UK promo trip every time. They've had two releases and an album here. And for me to have not known about any of them. So that's the UK cover.
Oh, was that the UK cover? Oh, that's gorgeous. That's the single cover for I Need Somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Glad you found that. Very Girls Next Door, you know?
Yeah.
Can relate. Jeans and a crop top.
Yeah, probably a flared jean that you can
Oh, definitely
see
a flared jean. Yeah, I had one of those. Okay, so following the success of their debut album, Bardo, the girls, even before the end of the month, they come out with their second single, I Should Have Never Let You Go. If I could turn back time, I never would have thought that I could lose you, boy, but now I know I should have never let you go. If I could have one wish, I'll be the first to tell you this is never what I wanted, no. I should have never let you go. Personally, I have to say I'm not the biggest fan of this song.
It was a really bad choice for second single, in my opinion.
Mm.
And had a really strange music video as well. It starts and ends with them in live action and then has this big animated sequence.
Yeah.
And it does not suit the song either. It's for a much more fun, up-tempo song, not for this kind of mid-tempo-y, more ballady kind of song.
In my mind, if they had beefed up the production, it could have maybe compared to Brandy's Sitting in My Room. It had that kind of soft R&B pop feel to it, but the production just wasn't great on it. And as you say, it's interesting with the music video because maybe the girls were too busy or whatnot, but they were overly ambitious with this. It's a very green screen video. First half, they're in a spaceship. Second half, they become superheroes and it's all completely animated. And this is a mid-tempo song, so why are they kicking ass?
Yeah, it's like they didn't really know what to do, so they threw all the options at it.
Exactly, but I feel like as a kid, if you're 9 years old and you watch this on Video Hits, you can be like, oh, that's a fun video for Bardo. And, you know, you'd be into it, not really paying attention to the lyrics.
Mm. Don't you think that in the animated version, Sophie really looks like Return of the Spice Girls era Posh? Or just before that, when she did Coming to America and stuff.
Yeah, it's very Victoria Beckham's. Yeah, Victoria Beckham Coming to America, that bob.
So their manager of the time, who we knew from the TV show, makes a small cameo in the video as well.
Oh, does he?
Michael? Rounding up your boyfriend.
As I was watching this, I was sending you pictures of him and stalking him on LinkedIn because I was like, where the hell's Michael gone? Like, what's happened to him? I need to know everything about his life. And turned out he went into politics. He went into legal and he became like a senior advisor to the Prime Minister at one point a couple of years ago.
Wow. If I was the Prime Minister, I'd want someone with pop stars on their CV.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the one.
Experience managing 5 girls and breaking them internationally. Tick. I Should Have Never Let You Go debuted at number 15. It peaked at number 14. So it's a number 14 charting single. In New Zealand, it made number 25. But amazingly, Joel, number 1 in Singapore.
Amazing.
For 3 weeks. And my favourite thing when I was watching this video back on YouTube and looking through the comments, my favourite comment was, this song was really hot in Singapore when I was 12.
Aww.
The girls made an impact.
So then, following up from I Should Have Never Let You Go, Bardo released their third single, These Days, which is an absolute real fan favourite.
Mm.
Now, this song shows a real sort of edgier side to Bardot. It's a real absolute rocking track. It's one of my absolute favourites on the album.
Oh.
And one of my favourite singles of theirs. It's always, I'm really happy when this song comes on.
Oh, really? I didn't know you felt that way. Wow.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm an edgy boy, aren't I? You know. So this, they really hit you with this one. This should have been the second. Well, the second single shouldn't have been a single.
This song was co-written by Phil Thornalley, who did Nell Imbruglia's Torn.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Credibility.
The Australian Alanis Morissette.
I love that the verses are very dark and moody. It's almost a very different production in it. And then the chorus is like very light and summery and very uplifting.
This song has the incredible lyric sung by Belinda, I believe. Out of the fire and into the swimming pool.
Not into the water, not into the ocean, a swimming pool.
Yeah.
With chlorine and probably like a machine that rakes up the leaves in the corner.
Now, the music video for this.
Oh, giving you mood upon mood upon mood.
And then glorious, we're sat around the fire, all looking gorgeous and glamorous, very sort of Dawson's Creek, yeah. Very WB in the US or T4 in the UK, teen sexy drama,
yeah,
wind
party
machine
on the
beach,
yes.
Party, naughty teens, college, little cheeky drink. Sally, which I've never seen or noticed before, looks a bit like a Siobhan from the Sugar Babes in this music video.
Now, I think Sally was maybe a bit underused in the group. Somehow, she excelled at the spoken word parts.
Yeah.
She owned it in Poison, and she got given a proper spoken word verse in here.
But as well, it's like, that's a great opportunity to get the spoken word, because you still get the spotlight and a chance to show off and the people to know you.
Thank you for not being here. I feel better.
So this song peaked at number 19 on the ARIA charts. Very respectable for a third single of a great selling album.
Mm. And by this stage, Bardot has clocked up 3 consecutive top 20 hits. Not everybody has that.
Not everybody has that. It sold 35,000 copies in Australia. And this was performed at the ARIAs as well.
Ooh.
It was very dramatic performance.
Oh, I don't think I know this performance.
Didn't do much research, did you? So, this song was also covered by the original teen queen, pageant turned pop princess herself, Jennifer Page.
Jennifer Page's cover of These Days, I have to say, and you only just played it for me about 5 seconds ago, I really like it. I approve.
Why the hell not? If it's a great song, it's great that Bardot have it, it's great that Jennifer has it. An Icelandic pop group also covered it in concert and released it as a single in 2008.
Wow. As late as 2008, people were releasing this song.
And I'm really happy to say that on the date of this podcast being released, I've drop-released it as a single.
Nope. Here we go. That's exclusive. These days go on and on and on and on. Would you have me as BV?
Featuring David Lim, yeah. On BVs. You could come in and do the spoken word bit. But then on the live performance, I'll push you out of the way. I'll pop it in the choreography. That's the end of first album era Bardot.
It is indeed. So the very same month they dropped These Days, the girls embarked on an Australian tour, which was really quite well received, considering it's their first concert series.
It would be. Look how popular that one concert was.
Mm, exactly. Sadly, they had to cancel the New Zealand dates due to poor sales, but they got a first tour out of the way, which is amazing considering it's such a new group.
And 3 singles, 1 album.
Exactly. They went and did what they had to do. So that is the year 2000 for our girls, Bardo. Poison was released here in April 2001.
Mm.
But also, while they're here, going to get a few recording sesh in for the next album. Very exciting. They're working with Swedish pop producers, the Merlin Group, which that group has worked with Danny Minogue, Britney
Spears. All that.
Britney Spears, just to clarify. Yeah, so it's very exciting for Bardo because they've already proven themselves as a group in the first album. They're commanding bigger name producers. Now, we were looking at a couple of performances that were over here around that time. And this is kind of post-Hearsay, wasn't it? Post the first UK series of pop stars. Yeah, so people were going,
huge.
So people were going, okay, we've had Hearsay, but these are the Aussie girls.
And now it's time for the Australian pop stars. They'll be performing for us right now. They go by the name of Bardo. Their single's called Poison. It's out April the 2nd.
Pop stars started in January 2001 here. So we would have... So it would have really been like Pure and Simple would have just been huge. So I do remember one thing on SMTV, and it was the UK... They did a game show format, UK pop stars vs an international pop stars. Now, in my memory, I don't think it was Bardo. I thought it was a European pop stars. But I can't remember much of that, but I can just remember 8-year-old me thinking, I don't want to see another pop stars. I love Hearsay.
Yeah. There were ours, yeah.
They're our band. Why is someone else coming here saying they've done pop stars?
Mm.
I've just watched Hearsay for 3 months on a show that I've loved.
Wow.
So I was very territorial about that.
And Tiffany from the group actually said it years later that, like, everyone was obsessed with Hearsay at the time. Like, you know, no one really cared about us.
So you have copies here, shout out to Dan again, of the two UK releases. And they both have plastered on the front of them from the hit Australian TV show Pop Stars. I think if they had probably launched as this, it's the hugest girl band in Australia, Bardo.
Without leaning on the Pop Stars narrative.
It would have just been like, oh wow, fun new girl band.
Yeah.
So you're not doing any comparisons to Hearsay.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do that because you've just had this huge TV show in Australia.
I know. And also, it's such a big talking point. Like, you can't just erase the whole Pop Stars Australia narrative from Bardo. This trip, in a way, was very pivotal for those reasons that they were here to launch themselves in the UK. They were here to work on material on the second album. And then suddenly, without any real warning, we lost a member. Katie Underwood decided to leave. Now, at the time, there was a lot of stuff that maybe was a bit mystified in the press, but as the years have gone on, we've come to find out a little bit more about how that discussion came about.
Mm. By this time, they'd had new management, not the manager from the TV show Pop Stars that we saw. Your hunker spunk boyfriend.
Was fired.
So they had new management. And this is where, unfortunately, their put out of their work's going to get better. But it seems like the internal management is going to get worse. And the new manager says to Katie that she should audition for the musical Hair, which is going to be an Australian touring production. This is all sources. I was never in the room. Shocker.
And also, like, Katie has said this.
We're just reiterating. So her initial reaction was, I'm in Bardo. Why would I audition for this? And he tells her, you know, it would be a good experience for you to do this. And I think you should do it. So she's confused. But obviously, if your manager's telling you to do something, then you do it. So she auditioned for it and didn't hear anything. And she got the role. But her manager didn't tell her. So then she found out she got the role. And she went to the other four girls and has said it was half split, two saying to go for it, two saying it felt like a betrayal. But even though Bardo was doing well, and she said herself they were recording and they were recording really good music at this point, they still weren't earning any money. So she was offered a lead role on an Australian touring production.
And she would earn, what, $2,000 a show?
Something like that, or maybe that a week or something like that, which is a lot of money. So she went for it, and unfortunately, the money for the production fell through and it had to be scrapped.
So she really was caught in a very, very awful position. She couldn't get back in because she'd already left the group.
Absolutely messy, isn't it? Shame on that manager.
I mean, I don't know what the agenda was.
I don't know if it was more like to get yourself some confidence, get some experience. Mm,
but also, like, it could get more publicity for the group if Katie from Bardo's in a production and then it draws more attention to the group in a certain way. Like, you're, you know, building your name so you can be a big drawing card for the band.
And I think at other times she said it also felt like they was already starting to push Sophie as a solo act.
Mm.
So they were looking for excuses or things to do.
So very unfortunate. Katie leaves the group. They're down to a four-piece in the middle of recording their second album. But we're going to push all that aside now. Because we are... Joel's putting down his drink. Don't put it there where I can't see it. I might knock it over. We're going to put aside the drama of Bardo because we're going to come back to that. We now have season two of Pop Stars Australia, the scandalous season. In 2001, and we're gonna go in because by this stage Pop Stars the brand has become a worldwide phenomenon. We've had Hearsay in the UK, we've had Eden's Crush with Nicole Scherzinger in the US. Things were popping off around the globe,
and it's gonna pop off even harder here.
Not only is it because it's bigger, but we're welcoming boys as well for the first time to Pop Stars.
It's gonna be a mixed group.
Mm.
We don't know how many. You know, it might be three boys, one girl, two girls, might be three girls, one boy, two boys. So this series was an absolute wild ride.
It is insane.
Now we're having the luxury of getting to binge it all. I obviously wanted to watch it straight away after finishing series one of Pop Stars Australia. You don't have the room to breathe for a year that Australia had. So I'm instantly... We've got a new judging lineup. We've got a new lineup of judges.
Your girl Jackie O's still there.
My girl Jackie O's back, thank God. And then we have Jason, the iconic choreographer from Series 1. And then we have this woman who's known for running an Australian agency or stage school or both.
Her name's Jack. She's sort of like an older Katie Underwood. Short red hair, but... Yeah, but, like a mummy character.
But imagine if they had the woman that ran all the UK stagecoaches.
Yes. Sevilla. She is, you know, about her business. Mm.
Yes.
She knows talent when she sees it. I discovered
Nikki Webster. And then the fourth guy.
Les,
who's a former rock star. And then what was his job now? He runs a label.
So he runs basically, it's very interesting watching it from 2020 eyes because I can see that this was clearly, they didn't have a record company backing anymore. Because first series, they had someone from Warner
right.
on the judging panel. So you knew that there was a record deal at the end of it. But this series, they didn't have the backing of the label anymore. It was guy, Les, who would manage the group, but he also owns studios, recording studios in Sydney. So he would essentially manage the group, produce their music, and then find a label for them.
Isn't that wild? Because why wouldn't the label jump at it? Because Bardo's been really successful.
Bardo's been successful, but I don't know what happened behind the scenes, basically. Because the original management company that was part of the first series is nowhere to be seen in the second. So I feel like that was part of the whole shake-up. Like, it became... They opened the doors to new people to come in because it's such a successful enterprise now. They wanted to see what's up. And so, thankfully for Scandalous, there was a big record label at the end of it that became interested.
Everyone's watched the first series, so they're trying to preempt what they're expecting and what they're wanting.
Oh, very that.
And what I love is it's amazing, but it's so of the time. Not everyone, but there's like a stereotype of a certain auditionee of the time. This is what a Pop Stars 2 Australia auditionee sounds like, if you don't mind. Would you be the same? Oh, baby. If I saw you in heaven. Oh, baby, baby. Thank you. That's great. That's enough. Everyone's like, oh, baby.
That's actually the best audition I've heard. And I've watched the whole series. Why were you not there?
I was 10 years old and living in the UK.
You could have been in Scandalous.
10-year-old at the front. You were so sexy, talking smooth.
Oh, my God.
So I really loved this second season. To beginning, because it's in the binge culture and everything, I missed everyone we'd known to love in series one. And I would like to have started with an update on Bardot. But we did get that later down the line, which I loved.
Mm, Bardot gets to meet the new group.
The new group. But before that, there's more familiar faces. We see a very young Courtney act.
Oh, my God. Cute, gorgeous, so little sweet. Shane.
Little Shane.
Little Shane.
If only little Shane knew what was ahead of them.
Who else did we see as a fun face in series two?
I think what you missed out of series one, there was one of the Real Housewives.
Yes! Okay, all right, we're not going to edit this because it's too far into the record, but we're just going to say Jackie Gillis from Real Housewives of Melbourne, aka the fabulous wife of one of the members of Silverchair. She auditioned for the first series of Popstars. Was she next to Tiffany?
Tiffany, with a wig on.
Yeah, she was next to Tiffany in the kettle call, in the queue. Little Jackie Gillis didn't make it, but years later, as we know, she became a reality TV phenomenon in her own right and has released a book and has done some sort of psychic tour.
Has she released any music?
She did a single. I think it's called Shine It Up or something like that. Jackie got her pop star fantasy.
Amazing. I can't recall any other familiar famouses in a famous way, unless you have any.
We saw a young Selwyn. Selwyn had a couple of R&B hits in Australia years after Popstars. But at the time he debuted, I didn't realise he was part of Popstars. I didn't know that he'd gone quite far in season two. Like, he was literally almost considered for the group.
And there was also the local TV reporter auditioning and got right down. I loved that.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this up because this is on my list. A Channel 7 news reporter that actually turned out to be quite okay. Like, not spectacular.
But also, I was surprised when she got through the first round, but then I was, like, here for her. Yeah. She was the whole package.
Yeah, in a way. But also, I feel like because this show airs on Channel 7 and it's the network's news anchor, I wonder if they tried to string it along as long as they can so they can get coverage.
Yeah, I just didn't like in her initial audition when she sung the line like, "You know I don't belong to you, who don't take a breath during a word."
Joel, this is why we need you as a judge.
But you're nervous and everything, but you never sing "you who," like you would never do that. So they whistle it down. They have the final 10 and they've got their four, but they feel like they're missing someone.
Yeah.
So they think they need someone that isn't in the final 10. So it does that classic trope of a reality show where they're looking at the photos and picking, but you can't see what they're looking at.
Mm.
And then Jackie picks one of the photos and goes, "He is really talented." And it's just so funny the way she says it, bless her. I mean, she sold it to the nation.
You
want to
know who it was.
So shall we get into the final?
The final five? Four plus one.
One of the girls that makes it into the final thing, which is something I would have called out as a professional judge or as a judge, she's in hair and makeup and she's all excited. She goes, "My hair today, we're going to take it from curly to straight." They only have an hour allocated in all their times. She takes over an hour to just get her hair done, not her hair and makeup.
Mm.
So then she's got one the hair person on her hair, and then I think Jackie O picks up a pair of straighteners and is trying to get her on it, and then she eats over a half an hour into the next slot of something, so she's lessening her group, and she's taking away someone else's time who's meant to be in hair and makeup of another group.
Just so she can straighten her hair.
Just so she can straighten her hair and be different and be edgy. I know that's a really lovely thought, and she wasn't doing it in a way against anyone, but you've eaten into a lot of other people's time there, which is so selfish. And you've affected not only yourself and not only someone else in another group, but the other group. Four people in your group.
Your group, yeah. Who's this person? Call and shame them.
Tamara!
Which, we all know, makes it into the group.
I couldn't be relaxed and watch that. It really made me feel uncomfortable and stressed. And it was
and
really
unfair. And the fact that one of the judges
everyone.
Had to come over and do her hair.
But anyway, I had to air that off my chest.
So that was transgression number one against Tamara. You've clocked it.
So then they pick their final four. And they're all in a house.
So we've got Tamara Jabba, which is the curly-haired girl. Tamara is a very performing arts school girl. She has been performing pretty much all her life. It's been setting her up for this moment. This is her golden opportunity. And she sees it, and she seizes it, and she is in the group.
Not that I don't think she's a girl that looks out for number one, but it's just that hair and makeup thing where it's like...
Oh, she's a girl that looks out for number one. It's like, it's completely clear. Even the judges picked up on it, but they still put her forward because she was clearly, she had something. We got Daniela Scala, the short-haired, kind of sweetheart Italian girl, a real vocal...
An Italian Christina Aguilera.
The other member is Anna, in real life, is the music teacher, doesn't want to do it too
sexy.
They
kept wanting her to be sexy.
And that iconic quote from her when she was just like, in the dance audition, she was just like, I think I mastered my sexy thing. If they tell me to be sexier than that, I don't think I can do it.
I was watching it, I was like, girl, you weren't, no offence, but you weren't that sexy. Last but not least of the four, we have Jason Baird.
Like, for me, it was like, it's obvious you put him in a group. Muscly, great biceps, the goatee. Like, he just seemed like the dude. I'm very happy with the four that have been selected at this point. But they needed a fifth member.
And then we have one more who didn't quite make it into the final 10.
Mm-mm.
Who Jackie O thinks is really talented.
He was the one that she was like, really talented.
Really
oh
talented.
My God, she and I are the same person because I really fancy
this. Yeah, you texted me today, didn't you? Or yesterday?
Yeah, I texted you today, like 20 years after it aired.
So there was one man who made it very far in the show, really stood out, plays the guitar. He gives me the essence of someone that should be in a BB Mac style boy band or a very sort of guitar driven boy band, like A1 in their later work.
And that boy is Simon, the fifth and final member of Scandalous.
Now, do you think his surname is pronounced Dickham, Desham, Dysham?
I'm here for Dickham.
So, what did you think of the final five?
Gorgeous.
And that's just Simon.
That's my note. Like, really, like, what a good-looking group of people. And I really felt excited by looking at that. And bear in mind, like, I didn't watch season 2 of Pop Stars. Again, I got Scandalous when the music video came out. There were a couple of moments on this show that you told me about because you watched it in advance of me. And I didn't expect to be...
Shook
as hard as I did. The band's fallout with their stylist was iconic.
Oh my God, this is one
on
of the
this show. Iconic.
This is one of the greatest pieces of television ever. It was so awkward that I felt uncomfortable to look at the screen. I had to keep looking away and I had to keep telling myself, Joel, this is 20 years old, it's fine. So basically, the band do a big photo shoot, which is meant to be used for the covers and the album and
press shots.
Press shots.
Yeah.
And they meet with a stylist who gives them all these looks. She's a very acclaimed stylist. It's her profession.
Yeah, she was a former editor of Elle Australia, as it comes out to be. So
they do the shoot, and the label and the management are really unhappy. And because it's reality TV, the band have to sit down with the stylist and tell her why they're not happy and what's going to be done about it. And the stylist just goes to them. I mean, you're giving me these references and you're saying Britney, you're saying J-Lo, and really you need to be a bit more realistic.
Of course, you're not dealing with models. You're not dealing with superstars. You're dealing with these kids who just all of a sudden, you know, they're the pop stars and they're going to rocket off into this career. And, you know, they're just kids from the suburbs, really.
Like, we see ourselves as wanting to be, you know, beautiful and glamorous and looking gorgeous like Britney Spears. Do you know what I mean? Like someone like Jennifer Lopez or Britney Spears.
See,
and
also I think, gotta be realistic. You know, that's the only point. No, you've got to be realistic about who you are and what you look like, you know? And you're beautiful all in your own way, but you're not Britney Spears. Or the only point of reference I've had so far has been Britney Spears or Destiny's Child, who, to be honest, that's not what I do.
The vibe that I'm getting off you now is that you're not really, really into this and you're doing it for other reasons?
Obviously, I am into doing this. I wanted to do it. That's why I'm here. But, you know, we've had a few communication problems.
Yeah.
But I think I am fairly straightforward with them, maybe to the point sometimes where I am a bit, scare them a bit. But they do need to be bossed around anyway.
I'm sat there and I'm like, well, no, they shouldn't be realistic because they've won this TV show.
And their aspiration is to be a pop star. So why would you not aim for J-Lo and Britney? Like, what else is the benchmark?
Because you've seen Bardo, they've done really well. They've won this TV show, they've won pop stars, they're now this big phenomenon. Who are they meant to give as their references then?
Shall we talk about the debut single of Scandalous, Me, Myself and I?
Please. I'm gonna pull everything you know about me, myself and I.
It's April 2001, and let me just say, I was not prepared for the magnitude of a banger they would come out with. I was like, this sounds like a Britney record. This sounds like a Backstreet Boys and NSYNC record. Mm. Like, I cannot believe...
It was so Max Martin in a wannabe Max Martin single in a great way. Mm,
in a great way.
That it was so good. But I love this song so much. I mean, you know I'm obsessed. I keep sending you screenshots of every time I'm listening to it. I think it could have been a really big breakout for them in the song for them in the UK. I think it could have done really well over here. After, you know, they did support Hearsay on tour.
For sure, for sure.
Another reason why I'm gutted I didn't get to go to that tour. Also, can we say quickly about the making of the video that we saw on the TV show? The concept was kind of very similar to Bardo's Poison, but with a rooftop shot put on top of it.
These five of them served it up so hard in the music video. They sold it so hard. I completely was obsessed with it.
That's the biggest thing I was impressed with, and I have said, because some of them, especially the guy that you're in love with, Simon, were not dancers. The way that they sold those dance moves, I really take my hats off to them. They were top-notch pop combo.
Was it funny for you watching this series and seeing how much of the LA Cola commercial that had
to do? I wanted to ask you, actually, is LA Cola a big thing in Australia?
No.
No. Have you ever had it?
No.
Is it still a thing?
Maybe. Who knows?
Because after watching this alone, I'm like, oh, I'm going to try LA Cola. What's it like? Why don't you try LA Cola and enter our competition where you can live life like a pop star? I think you've been living for this song since it came out, and I've been making up for lost time since I found out about it. But you had the shock horror discovery today and shared it with me, David, didn't you, that this song is a cover.
We were living oblivious for 19, 18 years, like, thinking, blah.
How did they deserve to have a song that goes off so much?
Yeah,
you know?
Like, really pop off so hard. Like, how did our Australian act get such a perfectly formed Swedish pop song.
So the winners of Popstar Sweden, a girl band called Excellence, had this song on their debut album, but it was an album track, and it's a slightly more mellow version of the song.
Oh, very mellow compared to our Scandalous version.
Whereas this song's been a bit sexed up and poppers clocked up.
Really, what a perfect debut single for Scandalous. The image was right. All that faff about the styling, everything just fell away. You saw the music video. You just bought into this group that really, in a kind of post-Hearsay Liberty X world, these guys can compete. So, Me, Myself and I debuted at number one in Australia, selling over 22,000 copies in its first week. Is certified double platinum, and it won them an ARIA number one chart award in the year 2002.
That is absolutely incredible. Right, shall we move on?
To the album. Starting Something, the debut album by Popstars 2 winners Scandalous. It came out in May 2001, and let's talk about the album cover, because I am obsessed with it. I think this is stunning.
It's a really good album cover.
It tells you everything you need to know about the group.
It's like Sex Dungeon, but that's kid-friendly.
Yeah, Sex Dungeon in Hell.
If you're a kid-friendly pop star.
Yeah, Scandalous with the devil horns.
I mean, if that's what hell looks like, I'm happy to be there.
But did you notice in the logo for Scandalous, it's got the devil horns? Mm.
And angel as well.
Mm.
Very Jerry Halliwell there. Schizophrenic.
Let's talk about this album, because the group originally wanted to call it Think Again, but the manager decided, Starting Something is a bit more of a positive tone.
It's a really, really... I would say it's stronger than the Bardo debut album.
Oh, definitely. Miles stronger than the Bardo debut album.
So we'll get into it, but I really think their next single is a really weak single.
There's at least about 4 to 5 songs that would have been a better second single. Yeah. So we're going to go into it. My highlights of this album is History.
Yeah, I've got History is a really nice album track. Really nice.
And also, I'm Not Gonna Cry, Na Na Na.
Yes. I think I'm Not Gonna Cry would have been good as a fourth single.
Fourth?
Yes.
I would have gone for a second.
I think fourth or second, but... just not third. You can walk, but don't you do it slowly, boy. I don't want you to see what's going on in my heart. If you should leave, but if you look in my eyes, the last half of this album especially is so funky. And I say funky because that is the word that was used for this kind of era of music. I think that Think Again would have made a nice single if it was funk. I'm going to say funky again. If it was funked up a bit for a single remix.
Mm.
Be That Way is such like a boy band track.
It really is like a Backstreet Boys NSYNC track, isn't it? But I've got news for you.
I didn't know a lot, but I knew a lot more about Bardo going in than I did anything about Scandalous going in. And so this TV show really builds them up and goes, we can't wait to see what happens next, pretty much. And then I go into my research so excited and nothing.
We're sitting on a bunch of album tracks that had potential.
A really fantastic album, great summer album, 13th of May it was released.
debuted at number 2 in Australia.
70,000 units platinum.
But no real international crossover, sadly.
Sadly. They did, as we've said, support Hearsay on their UK tour.
Yes.
Which you can see more of on the Pop Stars Around the World special, which we've had a real joy watching together.
Mm.
And there's the iconic scene in that with the British security guard loving Scandalous's single, which wasn't released in the UK. It was there as an import, and he was getting them all to sign it and stuff, and they were so excited about it.
Oh, they were so living for it.
Well, as final preparations come together for the big UK tour, Scandalous manager Les has called the group in for a final pre-tour briefing.
All I can do is you got a job to do at the other end. It's going to be fun, but you guys are going to walk out onto a stage. You're going to play in front of 350,000 people who none of them have ever heard of you, right? There was no television show, there was no Scandalous, and there was no me, myself, and I, no signing something, no anything. If you can blow them away each night for every single concert for those four songs, you've got a career in the UK.
I'm going to be performing with Hearsay.
I don't want to use the word honour, but it's something like that.
We get to July 2001 and we get Make Me Crazy.
This song, like Bardot's second single, is a very disappointing and poor choice for second single. I really don't understand it.
I don't get it either. Make Me Crazy is nice, it's sweet, it shows a softer side, but we didn't need a softer side.
No, Scandalous. It's a terrible second single. If anything, you need to come back harder and filthier.
Yeah,
and
filthier. Oh,
like the Australian version of Dirty by Christina Aguilera.
But there are so many bangers on the album that made me think Make Me Crazy would have been like single number 5.
It's a B-side.
Ooh. So the music video, a little bit of an awkward, flirtatious exchange between Tamara and Jason that we didn't need.
There's one good thing about this music video.
Oh, God, tell me what is it?
The forced-in dance break.
We do love a forced-in dance break. As we said in a J-Lo episode, we do appreciate it.
Thank God. And I think that was like a panic moment. Like, well, what are we going to do? Something
needs
to be done
here. Well, I think the band
here
kind of felt like this was not our choice for a single, but we're gonna force in a dance break because Jason choreographed that dance break.
Oh, really?
He did, yeah. Make Me Crazy debuted and peaked at number 30 in Australia. Like, I really literally don't recall this song being on the radios or on the music video channels. Like, I don't remember seeing it. I remember seeing copies of the CD single in Target and me going, oh, that's a really nice top. And everyone's looking good. But I actually don't know this song. Does it make you think about Hearsay with their Pure and Simple and then what's the second single? The Way You Make Me Feel?
The Way to Your Heart.
The Way to Your Heart.
No, because that's a banger. It might be like mellow and not an up-tempo song, but it's really good.
Okay, so I feel like maybe like you're wrapped up in...
No, do you not remember it came on at Push the Button when we were there and I went crazy?
But I don't think
I don't like ballads. When The Way to Your Love was released, I loved it.
Show me the way to your love. Is that it?
Yeah.
It was a banger, yeah.
Thank you. Case closed. I've just taken you full circle.
The very same week that Scandalous came out with their second single, Bardot, our girls were coming back as a four-piece in a whole new look, whole new vibe, whole new image with ASAP.
They're holla, as you've described it before.
This really is Bardot's holla era. They are embracing a more R&B sound. They are embracing leather. Everyone's in black and denim and like cool hats and everything. This is like a TLC-esque song about your mother-in-law.
Yeah, it's hot. I don't think there's enough songs about mother-in-laws.
There's not enough songs about, like, family or mums meddling in your relationship. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really into that.
Yeah.
The single made number 5 in Australia, certified gold. That's her second top 5 hit here.
Yeah, and it's, well, Australia here.
Sorry.
So it was served as their second single here in the UK, but we don't have any chart data. This whole era, and we're going to see it on the second album, they came back slicker, they came home. As far as pop, and this kind of pop's going to be, it was edgier, it was harder. It was a real good time for everyone involved. And I like to think they were having fun as well. I feel, if you look at Our Girls, Girls Aloud, sort of the biggest girl band, a huge girl band full stop, but the biggest girl band to come from this kind of thing. I love their first 2 albums, don't get me wrong. I love their third album. I mean, their third album's my favourite album of theirs, but it's not until the 4th and 5th album that they're really seen to peak and get really cool and come really together as a group. And I look at Bardo and I really wish they'd had that opportunity because I think they would have continued to elevate and go to that kind of place with the right management and support. I think it would have just got better and better and better. And they just weren't given that opportunity. So what we've seen is fantastic, but I think there was so much potential for even more. And now it's time for their next single. So we've got a little break between July and October. But they've been, you know, you promote your first single of a comeback, you're on the long road of that. And the girls are back with their second single of the new era, I Need Somebody. And it was produced in the United Kingdom.
Ooh.
By producer Ray Hedges.
Who has worked with Liberty X and Emma Bunton. And this... this is a defining Bardo single. I Need Somebody... a fun, completely 2000s disco dance pop record, and I am living for it.
Tiffany Wood said in an interview that when we heard the demo, we hated it and didn't want to do it. But once we had our vocals on it, they made it the song. It's not what people would have expected after ASAP. People thought that we were going with the flow of what's around, the R&B sound. I Need Somebody is pretty Kylie.
Joel, honestly, the first time I heard this, I watched this video on a music video channel and I was just like freaking out, going, oh my God, the girls look so good, they look so slick, they look like international pop stars. Tiffany in that sequined champagne rose gold dress, low cut, wind blowing through her hair, stunning. Sophie crop top, silver top,
curls in her hair,
curls.
Yeah, Belinda rocking the hot pants.
Belinda rocking the hot pants on top of the billiard table. Queen. Why not? Sally owning it. Like, the 4 of the girls were, like, really turning it out.
It's very kind of like the Atomic Kitten Be With You.
They were giving more here than...
There's more going on in a good way.
Yeah.
It's also like, if, you know, when you and your friends are out at a nightclub and you want to like dance around and make a music video, if you had high production values, this is what it would look like. Oh, in a good way, in a great way.
Oh, yeah. It turned out to be Bardot's biggest hit after Poison.
So this song peaked at number 5 on the ARIA charts in Australia and number 1 on the Australian dance charts. In the year-end charts, it was at number 59 of 2000. So, wait, we're still in the year... That's not right.
2001.
Yeah, it says 2000 there. 59 on the year-end charts and number 4 on at the year-end charts of the Australian artist charts. So that is fantastic. Another gold single for Bardot, 35,000 units sold.
And also, Katie Underwood had said... years later that she wished she was part of this song. Because it would have been her vibe. Yeah, it would have been her vibe.
I would love to have seen Katie in this era.
Me too. Longer hair, red hair.
Yeah.
Like shoulder length.
Glamazon Katie. 2001 glam Katie.
So that comes to November 2001 and we're getting to Bardot's second album, Play Like That. Now this is where I'm really excited!
This is a fantastic second album. It's probably the best album that we're going to talk about today.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know if you'd agree with that
or not. Yeah, I agree.
You play it so coy and then, I agree.
Yeah, it's true,
Now, as incredible as all of this is, I have to say, for me personally, this album cover is not the one. That border is like a Pixo or something. Do you remember of the time, Pixo?
Yes, but Let the Girls Live.
If that was removed, it would be a little bit nicer.
Yeah, maybe, but it doesn't have the sparkly...
But also kind of like, you know how Forever didn't look like a studio shoot? That's what this looks like as well.
No, the girls look good. This is much better than Forever.
The girls look good. Of course the girls look good. The girls on Forever look good as well. They all look good. There's no question about that. I wish I could look half as good as them. It's just they deserve more for an album this good.
I personally like the album cover. I think it was marketed towards the Huns and it worked. So the first Bardot album, really a product of the TV show and everything. It had the push of everything. So that was what it was. But now, this second album is where we really see what the girls are made of. And I'm really happy that they've taken ownership about the direction and what they want to do with it. This, to me, as a Bardot fan, is like almost a debut album because this feels like what they wanted to do. Sonically, they are trying things that they wouldn't have done with the first album. We've got Play Like That, which has elements of UK garage in it.
So, yeah, it's funny that Play It Like That is deemed as the garage song because I also think You Got Me Feeling is a little bit garage. Mm. But yeah, it's the whole album is a great mood. It's a great mood for Hun's Night Out in the best possible way. So what were your other standout tracks on the album, David?
I love Play It Like That, but I also love Don't Call Me, I'll Call You, the Belinda Chapel co-write.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got that as a starred, as a top-notch one from the album.
It's All Right, the kind of funk disco number, which was produced by Tricky Stewart, who did Myers' Case of the X.
So I really like... Obviously, I Need Somebody, the single. Feel Right is a great track. Love Will Find a Way. Edgy. That's what I've got as the note for it. Edgy. But edgy with an A and a Y at the end and several Ys. Edgy. Dirty Water. Now, you pointed out that this is a cover. I had no idea.
Like, somehow I'd already heard Dirty Water somewhere in Australia or in Malaysia or somewhere. Like, I just knew it. And when I heard their version, I was just like, oh yeah, it's a cover. But tune.
Yeah, I've got They All Snapped in a good way with this one. Why did I bother? Shouldn't I bother? Like sisters, I work here for you. So, yeah, really, really fantastic album. Best that we're going to talk about today.
It really is. So, Bardot's Play It Like That debuted and peaked at number 16 in Australia. Now, that to me is criminal. It's not okay.
But it is what it is. It's still a gold album. And look, it's on streaming now for even more people to discover it. And if we don't love anything, we love an underloved, critically acclaimed or fan-loved piece of high-level art.
And it's a shame that we never saw more after this. So after the release of this album, Bardot and Scandalous performed at Rumba Music Festival in Australia in November 2001.
Does anyone want their chest signed by Bardot?
I don't know. I'm speechless. That's it.
Your chest?
Yeah, he's
struggling. I'm struggling now. I'm struggling.
Look at his pecs.
We've got our pop stars' faves, Scandalous and Bardot, along with Craig David, Blue, Shaggy, Madison Avenue, Mandy Moore,
Queen,
Emma Bunton, Tina Arena, My Girl, Vanessa Amorosi, and Joanne. Like I've said this before, I really wish I could have been there.
If time travel was a thing, we'd get back on there and go.
It would have been iconic. Scandalous was coming home after supporting Hearsay in the UK. This really is their big kind of like Australia return.
So after this, Bardot, they followed up this song with one final single.
Love Will Find a Way. Now this is a gorgeous song. She don't know it.
I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Can't stop thinking about my love life, shining out of my whole life. Oh, she's wearing a hat now.
I wonder where you are. I know love will find a way. Right. He knows it. And do you know what? Whether it was intentional or not for this to be the final single, it is very sweet because it's kind of all-encompassing of Bardot. It's very reminiscent of stuff from the early days, but where we are now, it kind of brings it full circle. It's a little bit Britpoppy in a way, of the sound of it, in a good way. They all look gorgeous in the video.
Sexy country girls, yeah. It is the end for Bardot as we know it currently, before they split for good, which by this stage there were plenty of rumours that they were going to do it. In March 2002, they embarked on a tour with Human Nature, the Here and Now tour, which is really perfect because Human Nature was like Australia's biggest boy band and Bardot was the biggest girl group. So it was a perfect synergy. And in April 2002, sadly, Bardot confirmed that they were splitting up. Two of the girls wanted to continue, and that was Tiffany and Belinda, but no one else wanted to go ahead with it.
Really interesting. We also have to say, they did do a farewell concert on television. They had a farewell special. And it was on YouTube, and unfortunately, it's been taken down. I've been trying with all my might to try and find it with no luck. Have you seen it before? You've watched it
I've
before.
Seen some of it before, and it was like the girls were given a very respectable send-off on Channel V.
It's also really nice that they did at least get a farewell show, because a lot of pop bands like this, how we've seen with Scandalous, how we've seen with a lot of British pop acts and pop acts around the world, they don't always get a farewell or a goodbye. They just disappear if they just quietly disband or get dropped, or we don't have that chance to do a farewell kind of thing, which is such a shame. We also have to say that Scandalous, unfortunately, didn't release any more singles and disbanded, which is a real... Both of those things are a real, real shame. And we will live in a what could have been. But we also have to remember the great stuff that they released. And we wouldn't be here talking about anything if they'd done nothing. We had none of it. So before the end of the episode, we're just going to breeze through and give our highlights of the solo outputs from Bardot and a smidge of Scandalous.
Oh, Disco Montego featuring Katie Underwood, Beautiful, was a huge success in 2002.
No. Gold-selling single, number 9 on the ARIA charts.
Massive. And shout out to Katie, because that was the ultimate, like, hey, huns, I can do this. She saw her Bardot girls doing I Need Somebody and she's, okay, I have my own disco pop record too, so I'm going to let you have it.
Well, before that, she appeared in Undercover Angels.
Joel, you've been waiting to talk about Undercover Angels for such a long time.
As someone that's never seen Undercover Angels, I'm just fascinated by the concept of it. In 2002, she was one of the hosts of another Australian reality TV show, Undercover Angels, with Jackie O again, I believe. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Olympic gold medalist Ian Thorpe as
amazing.
Well.
So then we come to 2003, or even still in 2002, Sophie Monk releases her debut single, Inside Out, which is a really lovely debut single. It feels kind of like a Kylie 4th or 5th single, I'd say. And with the music video and everything, Inside Out, from her debut album Calendar Girl, which comes out the next year, with also the follow-up singles Get the Music On and One Breath Away.
Now, this is a fantastic album.
Yes.
Which we have both come to love and adore.
Mm.
This was on streaming years before the Bardot stuff.
Yes.
And I had this on CD at the time. Is actually really good.
I would say Get the Music On is probably my favourite and probably the best single from this album. And yeah, it's a really good album. Sophie shows a little bit of her classical roots on it. I do just wish she and the songs were a little bit harder on the album, but it is a really good album.
I get
from
what
Sophie.
You're saying, but it's just like, I don't think Sophie is that R&B pop girl that we saw with the second Bardot album. I think she's a bubblegum pop girl, and she's the kind of girl that would follow in Kylie's footsteps. The rest of the album tracks, I could pick about 3 songs that I absolutely loved. So
we have to say before we step away from the album Calendar Girl, Step Back to Love is, for me, the standout track on the album. We spoke about it briefly on our S Club Juniors / S Club 8 episode because they share the same middle 8 on Step Back to Love and Sundown. It has the same middle 8, which is wild. But Step Back to Love is a banger. I think it should have been one of the singles. I think it's probably the best, if not one of the best songs on the album. I personally did my own Mardi Gras performance of it this morning.
Live for it, yes.
So yeah, then Tiff put her hat in the ring in 2004. She released What Are You Waiting For, which this song is really famous. I mean, I know from someone that's obsessed with teen films and American teen films, this song's really done the rounds in that oeuvre, and also the Bratz Dolls released it when they were a band. But Tiff released it as her debut single. It was really nice. Peaked at 27 in Australia. And then Belinda wanting to get in on the mix in 2004, she released Where It All Began. And then her second single, Move It Together, in 2005. And then Tiffany's back. She's got a few more songs, Devil In Your Soul, Spin the Bottle.
Oh, which was around the time I interviewed her for student radio.
You need to find the archives of that.
I interviewed Tiffany at this time.
Email them, get the archives. To round out the noughties, in 2006, Katie did another collaboration with T-Funk, a song called Be Together.
Which was massive. I mean, all the gays were living for it.
Ministry of Sound record.
It was a big dance record. In my early days of gay clubbing, this song was very, very present.
And last but not least, in the Girls of Bordeaux, we have Tiffany releasing her cover of I Touch Myself. And it's a great cover, don't get me wrong. It's very close to the original, but bless her. And it's so of the time, but it's so extra of that time. She goes as far as to go, that's hard. Very Paris Hilton. But you've got to love it. It's a lot of fun. And I could see myself doing it. So then we'll just quickly move over to the Kids of Scandalous.
Mm.
The biggest notable solo career goes to Tamara Jabba. Of course, she forced that solo career. She released two solo singles in 2005, Ooh Ah and Hard For Me. They're very beyond on the nose.
Oh my God, Joel, if you were in Australia at the time, you would have understood the outrage around Ooh Ah. She had a very famous boyfriend, Kyle Sanderlands, who put out Tamara's record on his own label, King Kyle Records. And the music video...
Not to be confused with Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit by Gina G,
unfortunately. No, honey, no, it's not. So he decided to put this out, and it was an expensive-looking music video, and nobody else playlisted it on radio except for Kyle. So got a little bit of backlash on Australian radios going, is it nepotism that he's playing his wife's records? Ultimately, it worked in Tamara's disfavour because people were very cynical of the song and also the approach. But she got lots of attention out of it.
She went for it. Do you think Tamara is kind of like the Lisa Scott Lee of Australia in a way?
Yeah.
They're both kind of that stage schooly kind of girl. But yeah, Lisa Scott Lee is a bit more maybe earnest about it, a bit more genuine. And then there's a really interesting story about Tamara.
So Tamara was part of a group called Scarlet Bell. It was her, Regan, and another girl called Hayley Aitken, who dropped out quite early on when they were signed to Def Jam Records in America. Can you believe it? Tamara, her new girl group, was signed to Def Jam and they lost the deal. So the next era was Tamara continuing as a duo, and they performed on the X Factor.
Bearing in mind Tamara's ex-husband,
Kyle, is on a judging panel.
So yeah, in the interim between her solo career and Scarlet Bell's, Tamara broke up with her husband, Kyle. It's wild because of what happened in X Factor Australia, performing in front of her husband. There was this weird back and forth after the performance. And then the craziest thing about it is the next year, the other girl from Scarlet Bells was a contestant on X Factor Australia.
Regan did really well. Like, she was the standout star.
Yeah, and you know what? I'd love to see maybe some of the Bardot girls do Dancing with the Stars in Australia if they haven't already. As far as I'm aware, they haven't.
What are the possibilities of getting a reunion? Like, there's been several articles published over the few years. At the 10th anniversary of Bardot, all five girls got together.
Girls' night in.
Yeah, private, just all five girls.
We don't know where that was held.
No idea. Very low-key. Sally presented a business plan to all five girls, going, okay, this is what it would take if we would come back. We may not see a reunion that soon, but
it would be amazing. So didn't you say allegedly they're asked to do Mardi Gras every year, but there's not that much money in it?
There's not much money into it. And
I mean, if they were to reform, it would be really, really amazing. I think a lot of people in Australia would love it.
All five of them. All five.
And I think they have that place in the hearts of a lot of Australians. I think there were a lot of people's first album. I think they were a lot of good memories for a lot of people in Australia. I hope we spread those memories a bit further, like they have been for me as an adult now.
Mm. I'm really happy that you could be part of our Australian pop stars experience, and even more so than I am. It's been really great, and
oh, you know I love to get involved, darling. Jackie O, Jason, anyone from Bardot, Scandalous, anyone involved in Popstar Series 1 or 2, we'd love to chat to you. Yeah. We'll have a good old chinwag, reminisce. Mm-hmm. It'll be loads of fun. So I think that's it for this episode. This has been so much fun. If you've not watched them already, get yourself on YouTube. Just pop in Popstars Australia. Series 1 and 2 are there, good for you to go. We must say before we leave, there was also a Series 3 and a Popstars Live, which was Series 4. But that's here for another day. And you can look those up yourself, because we're already on fourth hour of record. So thank you so much for listening. This has been loads of fun for us. I hope it's been fun for you. We are Right Back At Ya, the Noughties Pop Music Podcast, at Right Back Pod on all social media. I'm at Dr_JoelB on Instagram and Twitter. You can see me posting a load of rubbish, lots of fun stuff, having a good time. And he is
at Love Limmy. I've unified my account.
And, you know, he is sharing a lot of great quality content. Oh, there's
always
all the time.
A lot of rubbish on Instagram.
If you like sensual pictures.
No.
And informative Insta stories, then Love Limmy's the one for you.
Okay. Not the former.
That's us done. We're in the midst of Series 3 now. So much more to go. I hope you're enjoying it. If you are, please tell your friends. Share it on social media. Give us a cheeky 5-star review. Hate that word cheeky, but I said it anyway. We love you for listening. As always, you can email us. Where can they email us, David? He doesn't even know.
I really don't.
If you want to email us on writebackpod@gmail.com. It's really, really, really lovely to get your comments on socials and on email. We absolutely adore it. So thank you very much, guys. Some Bardot remix is playing us out now.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.